You're listening to Trump Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG. Thanks for joining us online at kpcg.fm and our live link there at thetrumpet.com. Lots of great places to listen to the content here on Trumpet Radio. This is Trumpet Radio Live. Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon here today in what is a, boy, it's been a beautiful summer. Well, I know you like heat a little more than others do, but mid-80s? Houston obviously has been having a nightmare down there, but boy, we cannot complain. We've had very moderate weather.
It has been extremely beautiful, just exactly what you would hope to have if you were trying to attract tourists to the state. Just every factor of the weather has been ideal, it seems like.
Yeah, so we've been blessed this summer. It's been great, and I don't know if that means a cold winter's coming or if it. I don't know what it means, but we'll take this for now. Very fall-like conditions already. I've gotten up a few mornings and just commented to my wife on the way to work that it feels like fall today.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like fall weather. A lot to talk about on today's program, starting with thetrumpet.com. The top story today, this would be really interesting for many, many people. It's the Trumpet brief from yesterday. KT Zu Gutenberg is back. I think of the Terminator. I'll be back, and he's back. Germany's rock star politician is returning to the stage. It's a really, really good Trumpet brief, especially if you've kept up with KT Zu Gutenberg and what the Trumpet's been writing about him for years. And so make sure you stop and check that out. He's got some speaking appearances coming up here, I guess, next few days, and he's making a return to politics there in Germany, and they are happy to have him.
Apparently, he's campaigning for the person running against Angela Merkel for the chancellorship, and he's getting bigger crowds than Merkel is, and also bigger crowds than the guy he's campaigning for. So clearly, he is a big star over there. He's not even officially running for an office yet, and already people just want to hear what he has to say.
Yeah, he's coming back on the scene at just the right time. Germany needs leadership. Angela Merkel has had a pretty remarkable run, but I think she's running out of steam. Doesn't mean she won't be back in for a little bit anyway or be around for a while, but they're just having such a problem with that immigration and the terror attacks. You know, and if they never had another terror attack between now and forever, maybe it'd be all right. But it just isn't going that way. They're just popping up, it seems like, every few weeks. And just real trouble over there. So he's going to be an interesting fellow to watch. Make sure you check out that Trumpet brief. KT Zu Gutenberg is back. Related to that, Trump, Germany, and KT Zu Gutenberg by Brad McDonald also. And then A Strong German Leader is Imminent by Gerald Fleury. Why is it important to pay attention to Germany and the leadership over there? Because of Bible prophecy. There is a strong man coming on the scene.
Right, and people have to admire at least the way that Angela Merkel has that compassion, that tender, motherly response to the things that are going on right now. But when you're talking about crises, you need something decisive, you need something strong and forceful, you need a strong man, which is what the Bible prophesies. And so many leaders over there in Europe right now are trying to be committed to multiculturalism. They're trying to talk about how, you know, we tolerate any type of lifestyle, any type of ideology, and yet the fruits are not there. A successful strategy at all. They need someone in there who is going to use some common sense.
And he's a rock star, like they say. He's very popular, a lot of popularity, and so it's going to be very interesting to watch him in the next few days, weeks, and months. Also, make sure you listen for the Trumpet Daily Radio Show today with your host Stephen Fleury. Some really interesting sound bites there, highlighting how, among other topics, that the media is really going after President Trump for, as they see it, a lack of empathy when visiting Houston. And it was interesting, a point was brought out that I had thought about as well on the Trumpet Daily, where yesterday they were already talking about, is he coming too soon? You remember when President Bush went to New Orleans after Katrina and they said, well, what took you so long? Are you coming too soon? Hey, how can you win? If the media is out to get you, you can't come soon enough, you can't stay long enough, you came too early, what are you doing here, why didn't you come here? It's outrageous, the coverage that they're putting on. Just the fact that he showed up, his wife was wearing high heels, that was top story. Top story, wife was wearing high heels. How could you wear high heels to a flood zone? Is that the big issue? I mean, are we serious about this stuff?
We've gotten incredibly shallow with our coverage. Maybe the media has gotten accustomed to the last president who would never cut a vacation short, never stop a golf outing for a national tragedy. It must have happened like a dozen times with the last president where he just would always take his sweet time going to visit a place that had been affected by something like that. So maybe they're just expecting Mr. Trump to be the exact same way. It's a bit surprising that they would say he hasn't been compassionate, because wasn't it the lieutenant governor or the mayor who said that he's been calling constantly to see how everything is going? That doesn't sound like someone totally disaffected by it.
Yeah, it's so strange. So the media spent all this time talking about how he just has this lack of empathy. And then they also, and a lot of clips are played on the Trump Daily radio show there, a lot of these media outlets playing a lot of clips about how, boy, they have been so empathetic. Their reporters helped somebody across the road. They helped the lady get into a boat. Amazing. They're going to save the day. They helped a couple of people, and that's nice. There are thousands upon thousands of people that need help, and they're patting themselves on the back for helping a couple of people across the road. The president's trying to figure out how to rebuild Houston. Not the same thing. And just the hypocrisy of psychoanalyzing somebody from across the country, saying, well, I don't think he's very empathetic. Were you there with him 24/7? You know what he did? Of course not. But then they're patting themselves in the back because they helped somebody get in a boat or cross the street. It's the height of hypocrisy.
And they're trying to paint themselves as his moral superior. There was another trumpet brief from Friday about how all of those people tearing down those statues now think that they are superior to those great leaders of history. Now we have the media acting like they are just the paragons of virtue. Even as people who are dealing with Mr. Trump are saying that he is responding to the situation pretty well, they ignore that, though, because that's not convenient for them. They have to, and really this is all they have going for them, they have to paint him as someone who is evil. They can't really dispute a lot of his ideas, a lot of the good things he's done while he's been in office. So they have to say, well, this guy is a monster, and we need to stop him. And why else would you resort to personal attacks like that? That's what you do when you don't have any proof for your side, which is what we talked about yesterday.
And in spite of themselves, the media has had to say a few positive things. I saw a few headlines where it said, well, he's done a pretty good job, but he wasn't very empathetic. They still have to try to find the negative story there. And I don't know if you saw it, but CNN was doing an interview with a lady, and she like lost her mind and started using profanities and everything, and basically because she's like, you're just sticking this mic in my face, my life is falling apart, and you just want to sit there and interview me, you know. And she was quite distraught, and the reporter was, oh yeah, trying to, you know, like touch her arm and stuff. And she's like, you still got that mic in my face, and my kids and you know, I've lost everything, whatever. And they went back to the newsroom, and the main guy was like, clearly distraught family, we'll be back, you know. And I can understand some of the anger there. You're going to sit here, you're going to do your reporting and kind of be highbrow about everything, and then you're going to fly away. But you want to talk about who has empathy and who doesn't. I think a lot of people see through that. I hope they do.
Well, the media just has a farcical show of empathy. They're trying to act like they are helping and serving people down there. They're just doing their jobs. They're just getting a good interview to put on TV. They can't act like they have spent nights in prayer and crying out to God about how horrible they feel for these people. They just act like they're so righteous. And people, I think, just get sick of that pretty quickly. When you're talking about a disaster that has wrecked the lives of tens of thousands of people, really what matters is the results, not about touching someone on the arm, having some sort of a seemingly caring interview. You have to get results. You have to fix the problem. That's what the president is trying to do, and yet they find a way to criticize it.
There's been some really, really bad reporting. And you do have to have reports, of course, and you want people down there reporting on it, and I think that's a necessary thing. But it's been – some of the questions that I've seen have just been ridiculous. They were interviewing this one man who said his family, extended family, had died, drowned. And the reporter said, oh, were you close to him? Or the guy just looked at him like, what, are you serious? What kind of a question? No, you know, I don't care.
Boy.
Of course, this is family. You know, I don't want to be too critical of the reporter. Maybe he just couldn't think of anything to say. But some of these questions are just bizarre and strange days indeed. So anyway, it's talked about there in the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and there's a lot of great clips that just highlight the hypocrisy, attacking the president on one hand, but then patting themselves on the back. Don't hurt yourself, patting yourself on the back, they always say. And it's amazing. Also, the Trumpet Hour program is coming up today. Trumpet Hour, why Houston is flooding, Islamic State looking for a holy war and missing nuclear weapons, and more. So they talk about all of that, including talking to Andrew Miller, who is a trumpet columnist and a former resident of Houston. So that's his old stomping grounds, and they're all underwater now.
Right. It was a beautiful area before the hurricane hit it. I've been down there a couple times just by choice, just to enjoy the area. And so definitely, you know, it's the fourth largest city in the country. It does have a lot of energy industry there that is crucial for the whole country. It's a pretty devastating flood for the entire country, not just for the Houston area. And so I would definitely encourage people to listen to Andrew Miller's insight there and how he is reacting to the situation, because it is such an important area and because he used to live there.
Yeah. Also on the Trumpet Hour program, the Islamic State in the Philippines just released a video calling for the assassination of the Pope, a holy war against the Catholic Church. Are we going to see a modern-day repetition of the Crusades? And another story, there are thousands and thousands of nuclear weapons in the world. What would happen if one of them went missing? The truth is that dozens have gone missing, and there's a chance that one could resurface in a devastating way. So that's pretty amazing to think about that and look at some of those things that are happening. And so make sure you listen for the Trumpet Hour program that's coming up today here on KPCG as well. And if you can't catch it live because of your hectic schedule, you can always find the archive online at thetrumpet.com and kpcg.fm. Today we want to take a look at a segment of a book, a chapter of a book that's free at thetrumpet.com, the Book of Chronicles. And this chapter talks about a positive view of history, and we want to focus on that concept and that idea today, a positive view of history. History, you know, if you look at the statistics these days, history is not taught in a lot of colleges or high schools to the level it should be. And the lack of a correct view of history or a positive view of history, it's leading to the riots we see out in the streets, the tearing down of statues and so forth. Having a correct view and a positive view of history is important, because otherwise you end up self-destructing like we're doing here in the United States.
History is vital to having a view of the big picture. If you don't read about, you know, hundreds and thousands of years of history, you can be zoomed in on just this time frame, and you can hear what the media is saying about the president, for example, and you can think, well, he must be the most evil leader ever, not realizing just what this world has dealt with in the past. There have been a lot worse leaders, and to even try to compare the president to Hitler, for example, just shows a shocking ignorance of history. To try to say that the Confederates are equal to the Nazis in evil is a shocking ignorance of history. You just see ignorance of history all the time, and yet history could really help us avoid some of the same problems that have taken place in the past if we would just study it, learn the lessons from it, and apply those lessons.
Yeah, in 1 Chronicles 10 through 29, that's 20 chapters, and it's about David's reign. And what's really interesting about that history and how it relates to us today is that it includes a lot of history, but the main purpose of the book is a positive spiritual message. And what makes Chronicles and this section on King David so unique is that Ezra, the writer, gives such a positive history. He left out almost all the problems the kings had. In some cases, if they themselves were a big problem, he just left the kings out. So when looking at those kings there in Judah, there were some righteous ones, but there were many, many unrighteous ones. And in a lot of cases, he left them out, as you see in Chronicles. And the point there is that he wanted to focus on the positive history. Not that he wanted to, you know, ignore or hide from the bad, but and we do need to know about the problems and the difficulties, but the emphasis needs to be on the positive. And if you think about just, say, the media coverage like we've been talking about, they don't emphasize the positive hardly ever, unless it's themselves, I guess. But even if they're against, say, the president, there's nothing positive to report. I'm not saying they should ignore things that should be reported on if they are bad, but we don't see any attempt to find anything positive. So do we see a positive nation today? We see a pretty divided and a pretty upset populace.
That's a great point. And I've noticed that really a lot of the best history of America does focus on the heroes. It focuses on the men who changed the tide of events. It focuses on triumphs in battle. It doesn't spend a ton of time talking about how maybe the Indians were displaced from their land, things like that. Those things are a mere footnote, because you don't want to demoralize the population and say, well, you're from a really evil nation, when if you look at reality, that's just not true at all. America is a great nation, so the history should reflect that. And it's the same thing when you're talking about ancient Israel. That was God's nation. Of course, some things went bad. Of course, they had a hard time obeying because they didn't have the Holy Spirit. But still, there was a plan God was working out there. It was inspiring. It involved a never-ending throne. And so when you have something like that that is so deep and beautiful in that history, that's what you should be focusing on. It shouldn't be, well, you know, they did rebel a lot. That is something to learn from. But the main thing is that throne. That's a huge part of that history that needs to be focused on. And that's what the Book of Chronicles and the Bible does.
Yeah. And it's interesting, too, when you're talking about history. I mean, even if we broke it down to, say, our individual lives, I mean, if somebody was going around just focusing on everything they ever did wrong in life, you'd be a pretty negative person. You'd be pretty. I'm sure if a person like that went to a psychologist, they'd say, "Hey, why don't you try to think about something positive?" Right? I mean, you don't want to beat yourself up all the time personally. But yet, as a nation, the U.S. today, that's really what's happening. If you look at the media and you look at the educational institutions, it's a constant beating up of our history here. But like this. The Book of Chronicles, this write-up at thetrumpet.com, you can get the book, it's a great book, but this chapter on history shows that's what Ezra was doing. He was focusing on the positive side of things, because there is a lot of good to look at. If we take the example here of the United States, I think a really good example to look at is Thomas Jefferson. They want to tear his statue down, or at least they want to put something up that says he was a slaveholder there. I think it's at the University of Virginia. And there's some groups calling for all these problems. Thomas Jefferson did a lot of really, really good things. You don't see the people out there protesting Thomas Jefferson, holding signs, showing the good things he did. And I would just, you know, question, what human being can you find out there that's never made a mistake? What's the hero of the mob? They've never made an error? I mean, if you just want to focus on the negative, you can find it. But what about the positive of a Thomas Jefferson or the great leaders that we've had in this country, the founding fathers?
Does the good outweigh the evil? It should be pretty simple and easy to see that Thomas Jefferson had far more good to be recorded about him than evil. So even if he did have slaves, what else did he do? He had a big hand in writing the Constitution, which laid out the freedoms that he believed all men in this country and really around the world should have. That type of document provided what was needed to go to war to free the slaves, because if all men are created equal, if they all should have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, if we are all created by God and we're equal under God, then why are some people enslaved? And so it's easy to see how the document and the way he wrote it actually led to the fall of slavery in this country. People don't even focus on that at all, because he had a few slaves. And you could probably venture an educated guess that he treated his slaves very well anyway. Even though he had them, at least he probably treated them well, knowing that eventually slavery would have to be abolished.
Yeah, when he was planning for his burial before he died, he only wanted recorded about him on his epitaph things that he gave to the country, not things that the country gave to him. So it doesn't make any mention of him being the president or anything like that. He wanted to have what he gave. And so here's what's written. Here was Barry Thomas Jefferson, author of the Declaration of American Independence, of the Statute of Virginia for Religious Freedom, and father of the University of Virginia. And those are amazing feats. He had some slaves. He had they were given to him by his father and his father-in-law. So that was the tradition. It was passed down. And he freed some of them in his lifetime. He freed two. And then there were some that ran away that he didn't bother going after. And then after he died, he freed others in his will. So he certainly had some. But what about the ones he freed, even in his lifetime? You don't see any mention of that. And, you know, it's an amazing lack of understanding history and then having a very negative view of their limited look at history that leads to people hating somebody like Thomas Jefferson when he was really, by all accounts, a remarkable man.
Consider the name of the document he wrote, the Declaration of Independence. He wrote that about American colonists wanting to be free of the British Empire. But he knew very well when he wrote it that that could also apply to people who were enslaved and would want to be independent from that as well. Definitely the principles that he wrote down, he knew would be applied to the slaves one day. And even just by the actions he took in his life, freeing slaves during and after his life, that just goes to show you he didn't necessarily think very highly of slavery. He received them from his predecessors and his family, but at the same time, he was letting them go at any chance he got.
The ones that he let go, too, also were skilled laborers. And so I just have to wonder if he particularly did that because he knew they could do well for themselves mm-hmm. outside of his situation. There's an interesting write-up about Thomas Jefferson on WND.com. It says, attacks on Jefferson come from lack of knowledge. Historian David Barton, author of the controversial New York Times bestseller, The Jefferson Lies, Exposing the Myths You've Always Believed About Thomas Jefferson, argues students at the University of Virginia are misinterpreting Jefferson's record. He said the root cause of the rage against Jefferson is very simple, a lack of knowledge about who Jefferson really is. Jefferson is an intriguing and multifaceted individual, but many academics don't like teaching about someone like that, preferring to use inaccurate stereotypes and seeming to enjoy tearing down traditional historical heroes like Jefferson. Yeah, they want to tear it down all right because they're communists. My words. As a result, they usually know little more about him than soundbites and platitudes, most of which are not true. If citizens knew what he actually said and did on race and civil rights, he would still be a hero, even by today's standards. He certainly was a hero to black civil rights leaders over the past two centuries because they knew the real Jefferson. And they want to demonize him today because they don't know the history and they don't have a positive view of this man and of his history.
And I don't want to be too negative either, but you mentioned how they wanted to put some sort of a placard up there that said he was a slave owner. What if those people one day had statues made for them because of obviously the crucial work they're doing as social justice right. warriors today? But then you have people coming along 100, 150 years later and they say, well, we're going to put a placard up of all the bad things these people did. Let's pile up the list then. It's going to be a gigantic list. It's going to be bigger than the statue itself. You know, if you talk about the things that are done on college campuses today, a lot of them are unspeakable. It's not a solid, reputable record that people would want known about them. And yet the only thing they have on him, they have one thing, and it's that he was a slave owner.
Yeah, nobody would want a placard put up on their house or they have to carry it around with all of your misdeeds on it. I think we'd all have at least several. And so it is interesting. And, of course, there is that biblical principle, too, that we're going to be judged as we judge. So it's interesting. You think that people that are protesting and wanting to tear down the history of the U.S. would at least stop to learn the history of the U.S. I don't think the mob's having a study session
right
before they go out or going back and reviewing it afterwards and saying, oh, you know what? Turns out we got that wrong, guys. So it's important to know the history. And then, again, you can always find some negative. When man's involved, yeah, you're going to find some negative. But there's a lot of positive, too, and that's what this Book of Chronicles points out in this chapter about having that positive view of history. The book teaches us how to raise the ruins and how to build a spiritual wall around spiritual Jerusalem and continue God's Elijah work. Of course, if you're familiar with the work of the Philadelphia Church of God, that would definitely ring true. At the same time, we have to expect fierce warfare. By studying the great leaders like David, we can see how to win this spiritual war. In society today, God's way is under attack in every which way. And so when you look back at great warriors like David, it gives a great example of how to fight and win. You do have to fight for God's way in your life, or else it'll be just steamrolled in this society.
It seems like the only fashionable way of life to attack is a Christian way of life, whether you're talking about true Christianity or traditional Christianity. It's all under attack in a big way because really those principles founded the nation, and what these people are trying to do is destroy the nation. They know they have to undermine religion. They have to undermine biblical moral law, like Melanie Phillips has written about a lot. All of those things have to go if you're going to build a communist society. And so isn't that worth fighting for? This is the greatest nation in all of history. But even beyond just America, biblical morality is worth fighting for because it's the only thing that leads to a happy life. People are miserable. All of those people who are trying to tear down statues are miserable people. They would not be doing what they're doing if they were happy. And we need to be defending that right way of life in our own lives, or else we're going to be just as miserable as that.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, we do talk a fair bit on this program or on this station, or it's written in thetrumpet.com about this attack against America. Mm-hmm. There's a free booklet at thetrumpet.com, very popular one, America Under Attack. And the issue isn't looking to the negative things in the society. There are a lot of negative things in society here in the United States. But if you look at what's really being attacked, what people are really going after is its Christian principles, godly principles, Bible principles. That's what's being attacked. And there's not another nation in this world that has those principles. Obviously, we don't have them anymore like we should either, but we had a foundation of that. If you look back even at the Constitution and so forth, they really were looking the best they understood back at those principles. Those are the things that are under attack today in the United States. It's not that, we're concerned that Starbucks is going to go under or something like that. It's the issue is they're attacking traditional family as the Bible lays it out. They're attacking history. They're attacking the rule of law. All of the things that are true and right and that come from the Bible, that's what's under attack, and that's the problem. And that's what, you know, people have to fight against. You can't change the whole society by yourself, of course, and we're not advocating, doing like people in the society are doing and running around and getting into trouble. But in your personal life, you've got to take a stand and say, I'm not going to let the society bully me into things that I know are against God's word.
There are things that are good and there are things that are evil. And if we just look to the Bible, it explains it very clearly, especially when we examine the types of policies that are being pushed today. Every single one of them you could quickly dismantle by a biblical principle. Immigration, if people come into the ancient nation of Israel, they were always supposed to take on the same religion, the same language. They were supposed to assimilate. They were supposed to blend in. Now we have how many dozens of or hundreds of different subcultures within one culture, and yet we think we can blend them all together or at least have these different blocks coexisting peacefully. It's not happening. We're seeing the riots on the streets that show that dividing people into different groups and having them all with different belief systems is not working at all. Welfare, if people were hard on their luck back in ancient Israel, they'd go out, they'd work, they'd glean the corner of the fields. They would not get a check in the mailbox and not have to do anything for it. So all these different policies we can see are contrary to God's way. And because we're doing all of these things that are contrary to God's way, you see people who are unhappy. Mr. Armstrong talked about how the greatest sin, I believe he said the greatest sin is ingratitude. Aren't all of these people who are protesting all the time ungrateful? The fact that we're in the greatest nation in the history of the world and they're still finding ways to bring about grievances. Doesn't the Bible say that if you love the law, you won't be offended? and yet people get offended by every look, every word that is said about them. You wouldn't be offended if you were just living the right way of life. People can joke about you all day long, and it won't even have an effect on you.
Right. There, again, it gets back to having this positive view of history that we're talking about today, because if you look at our lives today in comparison to the history of most people on this earth, very blessed in this country. Just the fact that people, no matter what side of an issue they come down on, can go out and riot and protest and then go back to their comfortable home and have a nice meal. Most cases when people are rioting and protesting, it's because they didn't have anything, or, you know, it was war or something. It's like they're playing. Like, it's playtime now. We're going to go out and get all mad, but then we'll go back home. And the thing that they don't see is that if you are successful in tearing down society, you are successful in tearing down society. You won't be able to ride and then go over to your favorite hangout and chit chat with your friends about how it went that day, because that stuff's gone. It's going to be gone. You're going to see that happen. That happened anciently. This book points out here on Chronicles that ancient Judah went into captivity. Why did they go into captivity? You want to talk about slavery? They went into slavery. Why? And it points out here because they were breaking God's law. The nations of Israel today have had a history with God and are held accountable. America, Britain, and the Jewish nations are prophesied to make the same mistake that ancient Judah made. And that's the danger, is that if we want to go out and be lawless and not follow laws, the end result is captivity. That's what's happened anciently. Even if you look at other nations besides, say, biblical Israel, they get decadent, they become very lawless, even more so than normal, and they fall. Rome, other places, we're doing the same thing today here in the United States.
That's right, and especially considering Antifa, they're the ones who are causing all this violence that we keep seeing in all these cities across the country. They're actual anarchists. They don't want any government, any law at all. That's why they try to undermine the police force as well, because, well, that's an oppressive group that tries to uphold law. Well, is that causing any type of peace, getting rid of all government and law? Is that really the type of future that we want our country to have, where we're constantly in danger in the cities because of people going to war, bringing metal poles, glass bottles filled with hardened cement, flamethrowers? Really? That's the way we want to live? We want to have to go out in body armor with a shield and maybe even have to cover our faces so that we don't get identified by the police? That really, you have to see it's coming to a civil war, and it's almost unavoidable at this point because of the law being torn down, and because every time a riot breaks out, the police are told to stand down and they can't do anything to rectify the situation. It's just to the point where we've gone so far in the extreme. We have allowed law enforcement to be criticized for so long that they can't do anything. That's what happens when you disrespect law, whether now or back with Judah when they went into captivity. You disrespect law, you disobey what God says, and then you go into captivity. You have Germans marching into the nation and taking you out.
And at that point, you can't protest captivity.
No.
Because they're not interested. And the point is brought out here in this book on Chronicles that we must learn to be very positive about God's law. This world looks upon it very negatively and is literally falling apart as a result, as you just mentioned there, Grant. There is such a negative view of course, history, but also a negative view about law and even rebellion. Certainly against God's law, of course, but even rebellion against the basic law of the land right now, like you mentioned, the police protests. Do people, like you said, really want to live in a society where you don't have police? You know, it's interesting. Take a look at Houston. Natural disaster comes in there, as it's called, and people are trying to help in every way they can, and a lot of people are very frustrated because they're calling the police for help and the police can't get there, or there's so many people to help, they can't get there right away. People say, where are the police? Where's the help? Where's the rescue? Well, when, people are protesting against police, there's even been stories of people shooting at firefighters, and not in Houston, but I mean over the past few months, as things have been pretty heated in some of these cities. And But how are people going to feel when that help's gone? You really want to cast off that help, that line between chaos and anarchy and rule of law and society. Do we really want to tear that down? If we tear that down and if we're so negative about laws, there's only one way to learn that that's a bad thing, and it's to learn it the very hard way of going into captivity where you don't have law anymore other than your taskmaster.
How hostile must they be toward God's perfect law if they knew all that that entailed when they're already so hateful against the law of the land right now? Clearly they would be a lot more angry, and they'd be trying even more hard to tear down God's law if that were what were in charge of the nation, which it's not anymore. So it's almost like the hostility that's on a much lower level just in the nation against the law that's on a much lower level in this nation it would be so much more magnified if we were talking about God's perfect law, which is the only way to happiness, and yet people just naturally resist it every time. No matter how bad the punishments get, no matter how much history says you'll be enslaved if this is how you act toward the law, people just keep doing it, and maybe that's just because people don't really know that history.
Yeah, just don't believe it, don't know it. And the point's brought out here in this Chronicles book that we do need to understand how positive and how precious the law of God is. And they quote Proverbs 29:18, where it says, "Where there is no vision, the people perish, but he that keeps the law, happy is he." And that's, as you pointed out a little earlier, I mean, that is the key to being happy. People want to be happy. If you look at the numbers of people that are on antidepressants, it's depressing. There's so many, and people are looking for a happiness, or they're looking for an escape, or something to get them through. The drug epidemic is huge in the United States. Alcoholism was talked about on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show last week. So many people are looking for happiness. They're not finding it in the riots. You know, I don't know if they think, well, maybe if we tear down the statue, we'll be happy. Maybe if we tear down the U.S., we'll be happy. But the more they do, the more unhappy they get, because they're getting away from the only source of happiness, which is you have to keep the law of God.
That's right. And Mr. Fleury writes in this booklet, the Book of Chronicles, about a lawyer he was talking to, or he heard talking about how he felt really negative, and he always was meeting negative people in his profession. Because you would think a lawyer, well, the word law is in the name there, so maybe they'd be trying to uphold the law. But that's not at all what they do in that profession. They try to exploit loopholes to get people free from a murder charge, things like that. When you're trying to supposedly free people from the law, and then you hear that, well, everyone in my profession is really negative, there's a reason for that. Whenever you tear down law, or you try to exploit law, or you try to bend law, or change it all the time based on whim, it's going to lead to misery every time. That's just tangible proof right there, when so many lawyers are negative, unhappy people, because all they do, their life's work, is tearing down law or changing laws to their own benefit.
Yeah. And in this Chronicles book, too, it talks about how Ezra structured this book to get people to be hopeful, to be joyful. And it says Ezra wanted to show them that it is through the law that we solve our problems and become unified and joyful. That's what it takes. That's what's going to take for the United States at some point to come back together and to be more unified again, for Israel to be unified again, is people have to get back to one law. One common law that everybody follows. People always talk about fairness. Well, it's not fair. There's just 1%. They have all the money. They do whatever they want. I don't get the breaks. But when you have God's law and everybody follows it, it treats everybody equally. The thing that's probably hard for people, though, is that, yeah, but if you break it, it also has a punishment that's equal, too. Mm-hmm. There is a reality there to keeping law. And I think a lot of times, some of the maybe segments of the population that are the loudest about things being unfair, I would question their law obedience, their obedience to law. Are they doing what they should be doing? Is it somebody else's fault, or maybe it's their fault? But again, if we don't have a common law, which we really don't have anymore, and maybe the only common laws we have are being attacked, there's no way you can come together and be unified. All you have then is survival of the fittest and the strongest, and everybody else gets stepped on.
Right, and we're clearly in the time in America's history where we're more divided than ever, more than when the Civil War took place, because at least back then there was a general acceptance of God in society, at least in a more shallow way. Now God is scorned. He's laughed at. Anytime there's a Ten Commandments monument, you have to be able to put up a monument to Satan. For some reason, that's justifiable now. The more that the two political parties in this country have grown apart and more extreme in their beliefs, well, especially the radical left just shifting farther and farther left into just total communism, you have people who can't even agree on what a boy is and what a girl is. You can't agree on what the best family structure is, you know, what religion it is that the principles that founded this country came from. People just can't agree on anything anymore because there is no absolute truth. There is no one law that rules all the people. It's even worse in Britain with the Muslim population being able to go to Sharia law courts. That's a situation where literally they're being judged in different courts because they have a different religious belief. And that's our brother nation over there in Britain. And we think we can just do the exact same thing they've done with allowing people to flood in and be hostile against the law of the land. It just can't work. And the proof is everywhere and all across Europe, in England, here now, where people are actually defending those who would scorn the law so much they would come into the country illegally, and now we have to give them all these benefits that they never did a thing for. Law is just totally being undermined, and people just can't agree on one system of beliefs anymore. So you can cry that the Bible is discriminatory when it says that anyone who comes into the country has to assimilate into the same belief system. But when you look at the fruits of the opposite way, it doesn't work.
Yeah, and the more it doesn't work, the more they try it, as if maybe if we broke the law more, then somehow things would work out for us. But so there is, I mean, you can just see these two different ways of life in society. You can see that there's a way that God wants people to live, and it's very rare. You don't see it hardly. And then you see the other way, which most people go, and they just go along with the masses. And you see the results of it, negativity, all sorts of problems. But again, Ezra was trying to focus the people's minds when he wrote Chronicles on the positive, because in the book of Chronicles, a lot of time is spent discussing the temple and building. Of course, they were rebuilding. And the point is brought out here that God wants us to get our minds on building, because that is our future for eternity. Now, you look at the way the Bible talks about God. He's a builder. He's a creator. The way Satan is described, he's a destroyer. He's a divider.
An accuser. He calls everyone names.
And so when we look at what's happening in society, just based upon those two things, who do you think is ruling? Who's leading? Do we see a lot of building? Do we see a lot of development and growth? Or do we see accusing, tearing down, destroying, disunity, confusion? I think the answer is pretty clear. I mean, people can believe the Bible or not, but I mean, you have to admit that that's what we see out there in society.
It's seemingly the most masterful part of Satan's plot against this country, against all people, is getting people to believe that he doesn't even exist. Yet the proof is in every city in America right now, where all these riots are taking place, that he does exist, that he is the prince of the power of the air, working on people's emotions. He's getting people stirred up to act like they never would if they were in a state of a sound mind. Clearly, he is trying to destroy and tear things down in this country. And there's a obviously there's a big reason for that. God has a history with this nation, and he does consider this nation, or he did give great blessings to this nation, and Satan is just trying to tear all of that down. It's just a sad situation that we're in right now, but there is so much encouragement in it. This booklet says, in this gloomy age, we need that positive perspective about building forever. There is bad news everywhere you look, but we have to see past the storm and be inspired. And the best part, God is showing us how. There's a tangible way to follow that will get us past all the destruction, all of the hatred, all of the actual bigotry, not just the so-called bigotry. There is a way to unify the country, unify the entire world once again, but it's just not a way that people want to follow right now.
Yeah, and that's what the ultimate message there is of the Bible. It's the message that you'll see at thetrumpet.com or on this radio station. The problems have to be discussed because they're out there, but the message is the good news of the coming family of God that will administer the government of God, and it's talked about here in this book of Chronicles. And again, this is a free book at thetrumpet.com, talking about, of course, Chronicles there in the Bible, and explaining a lot of those passages and getting some of the real meaty lessons out of that, out of those writings. And again, God does want Israel to be a great nation again. He wants America and all of the Israelite nations to be great again, and he wants the whole world to have this growth and this development. But that can only happen when people start listening to God and following that law. And so we're in that time period now where what is it going to take for people to listen? And, you know, if you look at the book of Ezekiel in the Bible, it talks very often about people getting to know God, trials, tests, difficulties, because the end goal is God wants people to know him. He has a solution, but the solution isn't effective unless people believe it and want to apply it. And we're at a time now where, like we mentioned the other day, Christ said, people have closed their ears, shut their eyes. I don't want to hear it right now. And so what is it going to take for people to say, I want to take actually a look at what God says the solution is and try it and really go after that. That's where we sit today as a society, where we're allowed to go headlong into our own way of doing things, but we see the results everywhere. Is North Korea a good result? Are the riots here in the U.S. a good result? Does anyone enjoy the bickering every night on the media? I mean, maybe some people do, but it's getting pretty old, I think, for most. Does anybody enjoy that? Is this the way we want to go? Is this leading to a good way, or is it leading to a real change in society where we come to the point where we finally have to say, we don't have any hope in anything we're going to do. We need to look at the law of God instead.
And Mr. Fleury does write about that here in the book of Chronicles, just about how God could reveal to us his truth. He could help us answer the big questions. For example, anyone who goes to university knows that you don't ever have professors coming in and teaching about why we exist, why we're here on earth. And yet those are the big questions of life. Why does education never even get into subjects like that? And God says he could open up that understanding to us. And Mr. Fleury writes, but before that happens, mankind must become more humble, childlike, and repentant. Those are not traits we see today. We just see unbelievable, appalling, shocking arrogance in so many people. And it's just, we talked about yesterday with evolution, people don't have a shred of proof for it, but they will attack you if you don't believe exactly what they say. That's their only thing they have, is they go on the attack against the other side. We're all human beings. We could coexist. We don't have to insult each other all the time. It says here, if we are perceptive, we should be able to see that man is seriously lacking in the ability to answer the big questions in life and to solve his problems. We can send a man to the moon, but we can't get along with our neighbor. Why? God wants to teach us, but mankind continues to reject God's message. Man is going to suffer until he is willing to be taught. That's the sobering part of it, is that there is a message, there is a warning message, but people just don't want to hear it right now. They don't want to make the changes that are necessary, which involve obeying a law that is of a high standard, but really does bring great blessings into our lives. If we could just obey that now, we wouldn't have to suffer. We wouldn't have to have World War III and the Great Tribulation coming upon the earth.
And it's still a personal choice. I mean, you know, anybody can begin to live God's way and try to understand it and live the best they can that direction. Society certainly isn't going that way right now. I mean, you know, we see these devastating floods in Houston, and we haven't heard any real calls for any sort of change or anything. Nobody's doing anything wrong, clearly. Clearly there's no problems. But again, there is an individual choice. There's a really encouraging sort of a segment here towards the end of this chapter in this Chronicles book of the trumpet.com. In 1 Chronicles 10, Ezra briefly covers the history of Saul, and if you know much about him, he didn't have a good end. But it was simply as a way of introducing David. Chapter 11 begins, "Then all Israel gathered themselves to David unto Hebron, saying, Behold, we are your bone and your flesh." So they were very unified. God's people should be so unified with the leadership Christ has put in his church today, and we do see that in God's church, but not certainly in society. A strong nation must have a strong military, but the lesson here is also for a church. If we are going to conquer for God, conquer Satan, and overcome, then we have to be powerful spiritual warriors like David's army was. David was a very courageous man, and Ezra focused on how he battled and how his marvelous leadership inspired his men and the whole nation of Israel. If you go and you read that history, you see that, of course, Israel, they were cowards. They didn't want to fight Goliath, but once David stood up and did something, then you read about these great exploits that people under him did, amazing feats. And it shows that when people become unified under God and God's leadership through, you know, King David at that time, the whole nation rises. Everyone gets stronger. Everyone becomes more encouraged and more hope-filled and more courageous and starts winning victories. We haven't had a lot of victories here in the U.S.
David's leadership of his army is another example that history should focus on those great men who changed things. There has been a movement in history writing lately, and Mr. Fleury has brought that out, how people try to say that events just happen. They're inhuman, impersonal events. They're just circumstances. They happen no matter who is on the scene at the time. And yet, because of David, because of one man, a whole generation of warriors sprung up after him. The nation at one time, like you mentioned, they were all cowards. And then David came along. He slew a giant, and he was able to be a leader for a valiant army. It's like Napoleon having the usefulness on the battlefield of 40,000 men. That's the type of impact that just one person can have if they're following God, if they're leading the right way. And that's really encouraging for all of us to think that we could have an impact like that, but it does have to have God right at the center of it.
Right, and that is the hopeful thing about even the time that we're in today, where we see a lot of problems because people are going the wrong way. It just takes one or two to go the right way to really make a big impact. And so there's a lot of great positive history there that Ezra focuses on in the book of Chronicles. This is a book that gets into so much there about Chronicles. There's so much to learn. You could look at it and think, oh, that's just stuff that happened years ago, but we see those same things playing out today. There's a lot of proof in this book that it is really for our time today. And so this is a book that you need to get. And it's called The Book of Chronicles, and it's at thetrumpet.com. And we're talking today about a positive view of history and trying to have that perspective, a positive perspective. And that's what Ezra was focusing on, because they were looking forward. They were looking at positive history to propel them forward to build greater and greater things. We need that kind of perspective here in our country today.
And we really do. And David was just an amazing example of taking correction and growing from it. Uzzah touched the ark and died, and so David had to focus on doing everything exactly as God commanded. The nation got back on track because of that. He had the chance to prepare to build God's house, and he just really gave all of the nation's money to that project. He wasn't keeping it for himself and his own luxurious lifestyle. He gave to God and was rejoicing and had a whole entire musical regiment of 4,000 people just to sing God's praises. That's an abundant, happy way of life that is brought out there in the book of Chronicles.
Yep, and it's available to people today too. You can learn all about the way that brings that happiness and that joy and that hope about here in this book of Chronicles. It's free. It's at thetrumpet.com. Get it right now. Why delay? Before supplies run out. Make sure you get that. That's all the time we have for today on Trumpet Radio Live. For myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon, thanks for being with us today. We will talk to you again tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.